Today on Maine Calling, fine chocolate from Maine. The Swiss and Belgians may brag about their chocolates, but have they ever tasted chocolate from Maine? Several Maine chocolatiers have garnered major awards for their delicious and creative treats. Think Bixby Chocolate's Creme Brulee Bar, the truffles made by Ragged Coast Chocolates, the Yuzu Nougat by Chocolate Passion, and the very Maine Needham's Turtles and Chocolate-Covered Blueberries at Wilbur's that make people smile. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we celebrate Valentine's Day gastronomically by learning about local chocolates. What is the magic that sets Maine-made chocolates apart? And how are chocolate businesses doing in the face of tariffs and rising cocoa prices? What is your favorite Maine-made chocolate treat? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Are you buying chocolate for someone this Valentine's Day? Well, then you have a lot of delicious, locally made chocolates to choose from. Today, we're going to learn about Maine's vibrant chocolate culture, what products are popular, what's going on with rising prices in the chocolate industry, what is your favorite chocolate? My guest today, Kate Schaefer, who is founder and artistic director of Ragged Coast Chocolates. Gordon McAleer with Bixby Chocolates. He handles quality assurance, compliance, and also makes chocolates. And he's the father of founder Kate McAleer. And Andy Wilbur is with us. He is the owner of Wilbur's of Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a favorite Maine-made chocolate? Are there some that you still have to sample? Do you have questions about what goes into making chocolate? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us today. Kate, I'll start with you. I'm guessing that this is perhaps the busiest time of year for you. How big of a day is Valentine's Day for chocolatiers?
Sure. So actually, Valentine's Day isn't our busiest time.
Really?
Certainly the Christmas holidays far outpace it for us. Now, I don't know if that's true for everybody, but the thing about Valentine's Day is that it's a single day, whereas the Christmas holidays are a season. And so the pressure to get particularly mail order chocolates to the recipient as close to Valentine's Day as possible is real and super intense. So that's what makes it kind of different. I was saying to our staff last night that suddenly Valentine's Day is like the new Christmas for us. It's it just feels way more intense these days. Maybe lots of people ordering more and obviously expecting a lot because chocolate is so much more expensive these days, especially good chocolate. So, but yeah, it's an intense time.
And for Gordon, same for you all?
It certainly is. And I agree with Kate about the mail order business, because that's a big chunk of ours. But also, we love entertaining our guests coming into the factory. And we help them put together the best selection of bonbons or whatever they may want. So we customize the service for the customer. And we always get a wonderful smile, particularly when we offer our samples. And they say, wow, this is really terrific. And then they certainly buy what they need for their loved ones, and we're very happy to help out on that process. It certainly is a big day for us. We enjoy it thoroughly.
And Andy, what about for Wilbur's? I'm kind of guessing that summer may be busier for you because your chocolates have, so many of them have sort of a main theme.
We certainly have a lot of summer traffic. Our two biggest days are usually the day before Easter and a Saturday in December, similar to what Kate and Gordon have said. But a close third would be either the day before or the day of Valentine's. And the summer tends to be spread out. So our Brunswick, we have three locations. Our Brunswick location does more of those traditional holiday sales, whereas the Freeport stores have a balance of both the local sales and the tourists. So the busiest day for our downtown store in Freeport might be a rainy Saturday in the summer. But for the other two stores, it's more like what Gordon and Kate had just said.
So interesting. Well, Kate, I understand that the story of Ragged Coast Chocolates is tied with Valentine's Day, that your origin story has to do with Valentine's Day. So tell us that. How long ago was it and how did you come to be?
So that's interesting. We started our business on Ailaho, which is a tiny island about 3 hours north of here and 7 miles out to sea. And Valentine's Day there, or February in general, is a really quiet time. It is, the population goes way down. And I think that first year we had about, I don't know, maybe 25 people on the entire island in February. And it's kind of lonely. And so for us, Valentine's Day was a time to just get together and be with each other. And so we would open our cafe and have people over for game night. And at the time, our chocolate factory was our kitchen and our living room. So there was that smell of chocolate and we were making up Valentine's assortments, and it just had a really nice feeling. And it was often snowing outside. And when the game night was over, we would go out and help people get out of the snow and get home, and then do it all over again. But that to me, Valentine's Day is that same feeling of just telling people how much you care about them. And if you're not geographically close to them, then letting them know that you wish you could be.
All right. Andy, tell us about the origin story for Wilbur's. Wilbur's has been around for more than four decades.
Yeah, my parents started the business in 83. I don't know if Valentine's is the origin, but it was definitely my dad used to give my mom a product called mint juleps, which we make now. It used to be, he used to buy it from other businesses. It might have been Havens or it might have been Williams down in Massachusetts. But they, my mom asked herself one time, how could I have one of these every day? And that's how the idea of, they had been thinking about a restaurant actually in Freeport, and that's how they made the decision to have a candy shop. So. Mm-hmm. So it does tie into that a little bit. And the idea was just to have one store. People right away started asking, what do you make? And they said, oh, I guess we should start doing that. So my dad and I started making one product, which was the Moose Pop, when we worked together on Sundays at the store in Freeport. And it kind of just grew from there. 3 years later, my dad was a full-time candy maker. And my mom continued to split time between teaching and running the candy shop for a while. And then we added a second store and more production space and started getting into wholesale. So kind of grew from there.
Andy, if I may, how old were you when you were helping your dad make Moose Pops?
We started the business when I was 8. So I started working when I was 8.
Were you in charge of quality control back then?
Definitely. I was the guy, I was trimming the Moose Pops at the end of the line, making sure that they're all perfect, getting them out for at that point, our biggest customer was L.O. Bean, still is, wholesale. So
all
for
right.
Sure.
Well, and Gordon, it was your daughter who founded the business. And unlike some of these other stories, she had a background in culinary arts, right? She went to school for it.
Well, she certainly did. She had an early career crisis, I would say, because she was halfway through a master's program in art history and design and thought this was really not where she wanted to go, and announced to her mom that she'd like to form a company with her mother and get into making chocolate, because Kate had traveled abroad during her college years and really picked up a lot of nuances of good food. And my wife is of Italian background, so can you imagine the wonderful meals that we've enjoyed at our home? And I was on the job. My previous career was hospital administration. And I got this call from our daughter, who was walking on the breakwater of Rockland, Maine's breakwater. And at that point, I was working in the Hudson Valley region of New York. And she called to say, "Dad, I got great news." And I said, "What's that?" She said, "Oh, I'm leaving graduate school and I'm going to go to culinary school and I'm going to learn about chocolate." And my first response was, "That's kind of a crazy idea." And then my wife got on the phone and said, "Gordon, be a little more supportive. Your daughter really wants to do it." And so we were all into it. And actually, throughout the years, we've been in business now 15 years, and the three of us have gone back to school to learn really the nuances of the art and science of making chocolate. And we've also had the privilege of traveling to countries such as Haiti and Guatemala and Trinidad to really learn firsthand how cacao is grown in the field, and just has given us a new found respect for how hard the work is and how labor intensive it is. But it's been a crazy, wonderful journey for 15 years. And no regrets on my part.
Well, given, and I'll go back to you, Kate, given the fact that all three of your companies that are also well-known and well-loved have such different origin stories, I'm wondering what it is about Maine, you think, that Maine is known for its chocolate. I mean, obviously, Gordon talked about some of the places in the world where cacao is grown, and cacao is grown, and it's not anywhere near Maine. Maine is, what's the reason, Kate? Why are we a center of chocolate?
Because we make it happen here in Maine, right? We are able to dream up a dream and make it into reality. So for me, I was the chef at a lighthouse inn on Isle of Hope before I started my company. And my passion was locally grown food. And when the inn decided to close, I had sort of forged all these wonderful relationships with local farmers that produced amazing produce. And when I came up with the idea of doing chocolate, I thought, there's no reason why I couldn't include all these fabulous locally grown ingredients in my chocolates. And so that's what I started to do, is cultivating these relationships specifically for chocolate making, including cream and butter, as well as vegetables and fruits and herbs and flowers. But also Maine, our roots are rural. Even living in Portland now, I feel like most people know how to jumpstart their car in the wintertime or, whatever. But we're small communities at heart, and so are the communities that grow chocolate, especially the chocolate that we buy from Latin America. These are small villages. Most of the cacao orchards are owned by families that work together. And so we have an understanding that that money that is spent in those villages stays within those villages. And the same is true in Maine. And that's what we really try to do here.
Gotcha. Well, I need to talk about some serious things here. Kate mentioned the rising price of chocolate, and Andy, I'll turn to you for that. My guess is that you have two things going on, that the price of the raw ingredients has gone up, and also the tariffs have affected your industry. Am I right? And if so, can you characterize how dramatic it's been?
Sure. The tariffs actually have been redacted recently. They just there were tariffs. The coffee industry was actually advocating pretty strongly for the tariffs to go away in the coffee industry. And fortunately, cocoa got kind of lumped in with the coffee industry. So we had a 10% tariff on cocoa that the you know, whoever was importing the beans was paying. So that was being passed along to the consumer at whatever level, whether people were buying individual beans and grinding them like Bixby's does, or whether they're purchasing a chocolate. So we had anywhere from a 6 to 12% pass along to us in the chocolate that we were purchasing while the tariffs were in effect. Those have mostly gone away. Sometimes it's a little bit complicated by how we contract our chocolate. So depending on when you paid for it and when it was made for you and in that process, that will roll back slowly. But the cocoa market actually has had a really significant tumble in the last, primarily in the last 2 weeks, but it's been on a roller coaster since 2023. Cocoa has been stable, trades on the metric ton. So dollars per metric ton has usually been in the neighborhood of 2,500 to 3,500, really over the last like 30 years. And so if you wanted to get a good contract price, you'd wait for it to drop to 22. But now it's been at 6,000, 10,000, it went to 12,000 at its peak. When it broke 5,000, that was the highest it had ever been, adjusted for inflation, since it's been traded. So really tumultuous. And there's a combination of bad crops related probably most likely to global climate change, where a combination of heat and moisture and winds at different times, the wrong times, plus some fungus that was happening on some of the older trees, particularly in Africa, were affecting the crop yields. And then folks jumped in on the kind of day trading market. Cocoa is really what blew it out of control. So getting to something like 4,500 or 5,000 was probably real. The rest of it was people speculating and taking advantage of the situation. So
it would be very difficult to price your product day to day and week to week.
Yeah, the really hard part was that you can only go up a certain amount where this consumer will still purchase, and so your margins shrink. For us, particularly in our wholesale places, that got really hard. And you don't want to lose customer base. You don't want to overprice it. And then as the market has just started to return to something closer to normal, it's down to just under 4,000 as of yesterday. Then the hard part on the other side of that is that you still have chocolate that you contracted when it was back at 6,000 or 7,000, and you're paying, 25% more for it than you would if you were buying it on today's market. So trying to figure out how to work back to a price that comes down to where it is, and we don't know if it's going to be stable. So it's a lot of volatility that most of us are not used to in the cocoa, in cocoa purchasing. We've had a long stretch up until 23. We had a long, long stretch where there were slight ups and downs. What we thought was a big up and down before is frankly what it might have changed in a month years ago. It will change in a half an hour on the market today. So it's really changed.
Gordon,
Yes, I wanted to add in the impact of the tariffs, and thank goodness they've been relieved on the cacao, but we also make a lot of chocolate from scratch, and one of our ingredients would be organic sugar, and we cannot find any sources in the U.S., so we have to import the sugar from Brazil, and that's now subject to high tariffs. And also we import from India, likewise high tariffs. And I also wanted to add in the cost of production with our travels. We learned firsthand and actually have done some harvesting. Each pod on the tree has to be hand cut with a machete. There are no machines, no mechanized process for harvesting the cacaos. And then also, you need to open the pods and then go through a fermentation process. Each step along the way, there is labor involved. And our mission is to use fair trade and also fair compensation for the hard work of the farmers. And that adds into our cost base as to one of the reasons why maybe our stuff is a bit pricey, but we do it because we really want to support those hardworking farmers and growers out in the field.
So it helps us really understand why chocolate is such a luxury today, as it always has been. We are going to take a quick break. We're talking about chocolate in Maine. You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. There are a lot of heart-shaped chocolate boxes being given to loved ones tomorrow. What makes Maine chocolate special, and how are chocolatiers faring in the face of economic pressures? Joining me today, Gordon McAleer with Bixby Chocolates. He's the Director of Compliance, Quality Assurance, and Chocolatier. His daughter, Kate, is Bixby's founder. Andy Wilbur is the owner of Wilbur's of Maine. And Kate Schaefer is founder and artistic director of Ragged Coast Chocolates. We invite you to join the conversation. What kind of chocolate do you like? Milk or dark? Truffles or bark? Send us an email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. We already have recommendations coming in by email. An email here from Mary Beth. I have fallen in love with Olive Rose Chocolates in Rockland. Not only can you buy amazing chocolates, my favorite are the truffles, but enjoy a cup of coffee, tea, or hot chocolate, and browse some lovely made by local artisans higher end crafts right on Main Street. It's a sweet stop when in Rockland. And then from Theo, Theo writes, my favorite Maine chocolates are the dark chocolate sea salt caramels by Monica's in Lubeck. I found them in a general store in Machias a year ago and plan to go to Lubeck for a pilgrimage to the source. And Monica's isn't open yet, so you need to wait, Theo, until April. But, you know, this shows that we're talking to the three of you. You've all won awards. You're all well known. But really, your companies are the tip of the iceberg. This is really a thing, isn't it, Kate? Fine chocolate comes from Maine.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes,
I'm sure you all have to sample the competition all the time, right?
Absolutely. And Monica's is, you know, was an early inspiration. And we started getting our chocolate from Latin America based on her business model, you know?
Yeah. So here's an email from Rob. Our family loves chocolates, and especially locally made chocolates in Maine. We especially love dark chocolate. I understand that lots of chocolate, especially dark, can contain lead, cadmium, and more. Do the Maine producers measure such contaminants? My understanding is that many of these elements are taken up by the cocoa trees from the soils they grow in. And so, Gordon, you're Director of Quality Assurance. What do you know about what is in chocolate? How do you control for it? What can you not control for?
So there is a relationship between volcanic activity and heavy metals being picked up in the soil because of the volcanic activity. So we source our cacao beans from Central America and also from the Caribbean, sometimes from Africa. And our brokers have assured us that the products have been properly tested before coming our way. And also, we buy a lot of commercially produced chocolate, and our suppliers likewise have certified that the heavy metals are not exceeding federal standards. But it's an interesting, actually, concern that really has to be addressed. And I think through testing and through proper coordination with your suppliers, you can remedy that situation.
And Andy, I understand that worldwide there's quite a variety of standards about what is in chocolate. Can you talk about Maine chocolate compared to something you might buy at the grocery store or at the airport in terms of what kind of quality assurance standards, what's in the chocolate?
Sure. And even though our chocolate ends up kind of going up and down in prices related to the markets that I was talking about before, the kind of beans that are being sourced that the businesses that are on here and others that we've talked about are sourcing are really, they're at a different level from what is going into like what you might buy at the grocery store. And to circle back on the question about the heavy metals and the lead and cadmium in particular, magnesium is another, that those tend to be in lower grade chocolate. And so to give an idea, we all of us that are here are paying, you know, three times as much for our chocolate as we are as one of those companies that you might buy at the grocery store. So the raw ingredient that we're purchasing is triple the cost generally, and we all receive when we purchase that chocolate, we're receiving a spec sheet. There's testing that's done on each batch from these manufacturers, and including for the metals and all sorts of other things, bacteria and making sure that there's not salmonella, all those kinds of things that that we want to make sure in terms of a food safety aspect that are there. So it is cocoa beans are they grow, right? So there's nature's happening out there, and they're traveling halfway around the world or sometimes less, and they're but certainly, it all grows 20 degrees north or south of the equator. So it's got a trip to get here. And there's only a handful left of facilities that are grinding beans at a premium level and making that into a premium finished product. And most of those actually are in the Northeast, and many of them are concentrated in Pennsylvania. There are others, Guittard and the West Coast, and others, Blommer. But all of those companies are 30 years ahead of the curve on the questions about these metals. They were testing for them before it became an issue. It was mostly Nestle that was having those issues in European chocolates, but they're all sending out with each delivery a spec sheet that indicates the levels, and they're well below, as Gordon mentioned, federal standards, but also on essentially nearly undetectable levels when they're sending out their results of their testing. So,
well, listening to Gordon talk about how intensive the harvest process is, and then the fermentation, and Andy, you talking about the transportation and storage, and then the grinding of it. Kate, it makes me think that making a chocolate bar, making a truffle, is pretty darn complicated.
It can be, especially if you're doing like what Bixby does, is working from the raw cocoa bean. We buy our chocolates manufactured from a company in Ecuador. So it comes to us as a finished, as chocolate. It doesn't come as a cocoa bean or cocoa powder or anything like that. So what we're doing is still complicated. We have to put it through a process called tempering, which is basically manipulating the chocolate so it does what it what you want it to do and looks the way we want it to look and taste the way we want it to taste. And then come up with fabulous recipes for our centers. Now, that's no small thing. So complicated it can be, but mostly it is a lot of fun and fun to talk to people about it and teach people about it.
We have an email here from Mary. Monica's bonbons are out of this world. Andrea Wright, Chocolate House in Limerick has beautiful and delicious chocolates. From Derek, this is Derek Lovitch, who is the owner of Freeport Wild Bird Supply. He writes, I just wanted to take a moment to plug Bird Friendly Chocolate, a new certification process by the Smithsonian Migratory Bird Center that's in its trial stages. Like coffee, which has an established bird friendly certification process, cacao can be grown in a way that protects bird habitat while producing great chocolate. For example, the first certified bird-friendly plantation, Zorzal Cacao in the Dominican Republic, sets aside 70% of their land for conservation. He says, here at Freeport Wild Bird Supply, we're pleased to have our own private label chocolate using 100% cacao from Zorzal Cacao. They protect some of the most important and existent habitat for Bicknell's thrush, an endangered species in Maine. Our Bicknell's thrush bar therefore connects the migration of this enigmatic bird to and from Maine. Gordon, you talked about traveling and seeing some of these places. Is this a conversation that you're hearing about when you travel to a South and Central America about protecting habitat, protecting birds?
It certainly is, and we specify organic sources, organic cacao, and just our personal experience is the trees, there are small trees in the tropics, and they do best if they are within the jungle, so to speak, within the canopy of larger trees for the indirect sunlight, the constant moisture, and the constant temperature. So those factors are really important to grow, I think, very healthy species. And at one point, we were involved in Trinidad in planting trees. And the growers specified that we planted the trees within the canopy of the rainforest. And so that's the lesson that I took from that. And by protecting the rainforest, you're protecting the habitat of birds and other creatures, and also helping out on moderating the global warming by retaining the rainforest.
Yeah, Kate?
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to travel to Ecuador to visit the farmers that grow our chocolate in 2019. And it is... You know, you walk through these orchards, which are really just wild forests, and it's alive. And this is something that is important to us, is that, you know, there's no clear cutting, there's no, destruction of the natural habitat for birds, other animals, insects, other plants, etc. And that the families and the villagers that work in these orchards feel the same way. You know, I mean, it's walking through the forest is walking through a living forest of cacao and lots of other vegetation, flora and fauna.
Yeah. I want to circle back to something we were talking about before, which is tariffs. Andy, we talked about the tariffs that were imposed and then taken away on the cacao. And then also Gordon talked about the sugar, the organic sugar, but also packaging is part of this, right?
Yeah, that's one thing I failed to mention earlier, is that even though the tariffs on chocolate has been reduced or eliminated, but all the tariffs on packaging remain high, and heart-shaped boxes, I couldn't even tell you, they're at least quadruple what they were 5 years ago. I did do this at one point going from 2019 to 2023. And at that point, everything had at least doubled or tripled, and they've gone up since then. So, and it's not just tariffs, it's it's manufacturing costs and all the other factors. But they've gotten to the point that we're offering boxes that have hearts on them rather than heart shapes, because in some cases the boxes, a third of the cost of the finished product, which doesn't represent great value to the customer. So it's complicated, but all other things, everything from cardboard's quadruple what it was 5 years ago. All the packaging elements have increased significantly, not just because of tariffs, but tariffs have been a factor. And the other thing I failed to mention earlier is that one of the big differences between, in the big difference between what cocoa was trading at before and what cocoa is trading at now, that money does not get into either of the Kate's hands, and that money did not get into any of the growers' hands. It only got into the hands of the folks that are speculating on the market. So it's really unfortunate. It doesn't help candy makers. It doesn't help cocoa growers. It only helps folks that are day traders.
Mm. We are talking about chocolate in Maine. What's your question? The phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine chocolatiers have a national reputation for quality and innovation. We're talking with three of them today about what they do and how they're doing. With me, Andy Wilbur of Wilbur's of Maine, Kate Schaefer of Ragged Coast Chocolates, and Gordon McAleer of Bixby Chocolates. What are your questions? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. So many questions coming in. Let's see here. These two are kind of related, so I'll read both of these. Emily on Facebook writes, are there any small organic cacao producers with zero heavy metals in their cocoa? Consumer Reports reported on heavy metals in chocolate in 2024. And then Sue says, don't forget Dean's Sweets truffles right here in Portland. Also, I heard some of the heavy metals in chocolate come from the drying process out in open air, that there's lead in the dust and the dust circulates and gets on the beans. So just further questions about this question of heavy metals. Who wants to take those?
So the drying process, what I have seen and what I know about it, it varies greatly from location to location. What I witnessed on the farms and collection centers that I went to in Ecuador is that they had drying areas specifically for that purpose, and they were protected from rainfall, from a lot of airborne stuff. They weren't inside, but they were, because obviously they need to be sun-dried, but they were in controlled areas, so there wasn't a lot of chance for outside contamination like that.
Gordon.
Yes, our experience in traveling to these countries, the drying process happens in these huts, which allow free air and also to control any kind of invasion from rainfall. So the drying is on these tables, so to speak, not on the ground. But I gather sometimes if you get beans from the African countries, their drying process may be a little more primitive, perhaps drying on the ground. But we source our products really from responsible producers who are processing the beans.
Mm-hmm. And the question about, are there any that have zero heavy metals in their cacao or cocoa? Is that there's no way to know that, I guess. Okay. Thank you. An email here from Alec. Can the panel comment on the health benefits of dark chocolate? Kind of a funny question. We don't have nutritionists on the panel today. We have chocolatiers. And I suspect you all are going to say, and I'll go to you, Andy, that dark chocolate's great for you.
Chocolate is a health food. I mean, there's no question about that. It's. I mean, the antioxidant values, those are things that we hear about. There's data about it extending lifespan, we know that it improves quality of life on a daily basis. But it's a mood booster, keeps away dementors. It's all the things, there's really no comparison for the quality of chocolate in your daily
life.
And
Andy, I'm thinking that your chocolate that has blueberries and chocolate, boy, all the antioxidants in that, right?
Yeah, I mean, stack it up against any health food, it wins every time.
Gordon, you wanted to chime in.
Oh, I was just going to echo that. Absolutely. And also there's a sweetness factor, just enjoying something that is lovely. But yeah, the scientists are coming out with some amazing research on helping your cardiac performance. And for those of us with a little bit of gray hair, keeping our mental acuity going. And also you think of the high fiber and the vitamins and minerals. And so it really is, I think, a wonderful indulgence to keep you healthy by all
How
means.
How about the regular chocolate, the milk chocolate versus dark chocolate debate? Kate, is dark chocolate really better for you?
I come from the school of thoughts where all chocolates are created equal. And I think they are all healthy in their own ways. Certainly all the science behind dark chocolate is pretty encouraging. However, I will say that especially when we are very busy and trying to make deadlines and trying to stock stores and et cetera, I am super comforted by the fact that I have several tons of chocolate all around me. And chocolate is a definitely daily indulgence for me.
All right. Well, Alec, I appreciate the question. And I will repeat that we are talking to chocolatiers, not nutritionists. And we can talk about sugar on another day. Let's see here. An email from Mike. Does Wilbur's of Maine still sell the Shaw Bar, a tribute to Dr. Nir Shaw? And are those ingredients especially healthy? Andy?
So the bar is the same bar that we sell in every other way. It's the same chocolate that we use, our milk chocolate, or dark. When we were doing the bar initially, we just did a few, but we ended up having the whole range in the Shaw bars. That blew up like nothing I've seen. We do have them at our stores. We actually the idea and its origin is that my mom had always made for the gubernatorial candidates and for the presidential candidates, she had made candidate bars, and you could essentially vote by purchasing the bar of your choice, or you could needle your friends and give them the bar of the candidate that they didn't like. So I imagine as we get closer to the gubernatorial race, we'll have when we narrow down the candidates from the giant list that it is now, we'll have a range of bars to choose from for that as well.
Well, Andy, there are only 23 gubernatorial candidates right now.
it would be a lot of design work in order to get all of them on each have their own bar. And I don't know if we have enough shelf space in our store.
We'll go to Chad, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Chad. Go ahead.
It's Tad.
Oh, go ahead, Tad.
I was a chocolate manufacturer importing beans from around the world, a small family business. A couple comments. In processing the beans, they're fermented, and after they're fermented, they're cleaned. Fermenting is a real key step in flavor development. They're cleaned and left out to dry, as described before. But most of the heavy metals and so forth are absorbed in the shell. And that is eliminated during the process in the grinding of the beans. And I just wanted to say it's very, very minimal when you put a center around it and things like that.
Well, Chad, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. Email here from Kathy. We have family members who are significantly allergic to tree nuts, yet love chocolate, especially dark. We are lucky in Maine to have Dean's Sweets, where the entire operation is nut-free. By the way, when not worried about nuts, we enjoy dark chocolate from Olive Rose, named for the first woman elected to public office in the country, and Bixby and Ragged Coast as well, of course. Let's see, an email from Philip. La Neff Chocolate out of Bath has a synergy with the arts. The boxes themselves have artwork from various local artists and beyond. The boxes could almost be framed in and of itself. Some of the proceeds of the sales, I believe, have gone to the artists. They also provide links to the musician's music, and not to mention the delicious chocolate is inspired in some way by the artist. From Vanessa, my favorite Bixby chocolate, nutty for me, milk chocolate, peanuts, and Maine sea salt chocolate bar. So nutty for me. Vanessa, Zandy, is that one of your popular ones? I mean, excuse me, Gordon?
Oh, by all means, yes. And it's certified organic, and it's really a yummy, one of my favorite treats also.
All right. An email here from Peter. Ivory Coast, Ghana, and West Africa generally produce about 70% of the world's crop. Are you buying from there, and why or why not? So I've heard, Gordon, you and Kate both talking about Central and South America. Kate, go ahead.
Yeah, so we don't buy beans from Africa, although I did have a friend that just went to Ghana, and there are some small collectives that are making responsibly sourced chocolates, and that she brought me samples home. And so that's really encouraging and wonderful and exciting. But for the, we source all of our chocolate from Latin America, and it's directly traded. So that means that our manufacturer, República del Cacao in Ecuador and Quito, are buying directly from the farmers. So that's how we do it. And so, no, we're not buying from Africa.
Okay. What about you, Gordon?
Occasionally we've gotten beans from Ghana and had really good success with that, but we specify organic. And we want to be sure that there's traceability documentation right to the grower. And so with Ghana, we've had some success, yes.
And Andy, you?
Yeah, we have multiple sources on our chocolate. So it's a combination. And many manufacturers actually do for flavor profiling, and there's a high crop and an off-season crop. They're 6 months apart for trees, and so in order to get consistency in the product, they oftentimes blend from different parts. So we actually have one, our milk chocolate that we use primarily is actually from Java and Sumatra, so Southeast Asia and Indonesia. Our dark chocolate does source both from Central and South America and from Ivory Coast and Ghana. Our white chocolates are usually beans, which end up, the cocoa butter. There's no chocolate liqueur in white chocolate. So the cocoa butter is usually from beans that are squeezed in country. And a lot of that is coming from Africa. So we get it from all over, and it's it varies depending on the time of the year.
Interesting you mentioned white chocolate, Andy, because there's an email here from Jean. She says, I'm originally from Massachusetts and lived close enough to Hebert Candy Mansion in Shrewsbury. A few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, my family and I went in and noticed a big void, no white chocolate. The owner told us there was an ingredient they were having trouble getting and would not make it without. She wouldn't say what it was. Any thoughts, Andy, since you mentioned white chocolate? Does that sound like ring a bell?
I don't know what the mysterious ingredient was that they, because I don't think Hebert's grinds their own. So I'm not sure what it was that they were having trouble sourcing. I know white chocolate, because of the shortage of beans in general, was much more expensive. It was sometimes 4 and 5 times more expensive than it had been in 23 or 22 versus 24, because the shortage of beans meant the beans that stayed in country to be made into cocoa butter kind of weren't available because people were buying up every last bean. So that had been kind of a secondary product that was made and was less expensive and was utilized in white chocolate. And and that kind of went away. So that probably made a struggle for sourcing white chocolate. But I'm not. It may have been some other answer to that.
All right. Well, we're out of time, but we do have time to read this email from Michael. I consider chocolate a mental health food. So there you go. Thank you, Michael, for that. Good way to end the program today. And thank you to our guests, the voice you just heard, Andy Wilbur of Wilbur's of Maine. Also with us, Gordon McAleer with Bixby Chocolates and Kate Schaefer with Ragged Coast Chocolates. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.